You've tuned in to the Soundcast Stereo. I'm Christopher Coleman, your host. I'm on Channel 1, and the Mona Lisa Overdrive from The Matrix Reloaded by Don Davis and Juno Reactor is my favorite film chase cue.
And I'm Eric Woods from Cinematic Sound Radio, and I'm on Channel 2, and I think The Desert Chase from Raiders of the Lost Ark is my favorite film chase cue.
Our channel fact question this week comes from Isaac on Twitter, who's at IsaacCata1. We thank you for asking us that question. What is your favorite film chase cue? Soundcast Stereo episodes are two channel 30-minute conversations focused on a single topic from the world of film, television, and video game soundtracks. You can find all of the episodes of the Soundcast on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Music Podcasts, and wherever you can find podcasts. And you can send us your feedback at soundcast@tracksounds.com. You can use our SpeakPipe widget. You can tweet us at TrackSounds on Twitter or hit us up on Facebook. Today is Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016, and this is episode 10. Wow, 10. Where we are going to list our top 10 original scores of the new millennium. Eric, how you doing?
I'm good. We're a day early, so just a little frazzled.
Day early and still a dollar short.
Yes.
Today, we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. We're going to be doing a top 10 list, kind of-ish. And this is in reaction, mostly because of you, Eric. Reaction to a recently published article on The Playlist, where they listed their top 50 film scores of the 21st century so far. And that was written by Jessica Kiang, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Rodrigo Perez. And apparently The Playlist does this every so often. I also found a top 25 film scores of the 21st century so far from some time ago. But they just published this a few days ago. Someone popped it on Twitter, I think, and you, Eric, had a very pungent reaction to it.
I didn't mean to be so mean. But, you know, I've boiled it down to this one single thought, and I just think that if they change the title of the article, then I'm okay with that. And
to what would you rather
to something that just it says that it's an opinion instead of a stated fact. And the article has inspired me so much that I'm actually going to go through my own website, my own shows, and I'm putting down the word favorite. I'm replacing best with the word favorite, because it causes so much controversy and stuff like this, and so much anger that I get it's their opinion. There's other things that anger me about the article, because I feel like they are completely ignoring a certain style or genre of film score as well, just to be different. And it comes across in the writing. And that to me is like when you're publishing these pieces, the Playlist is a pretty popular website. So when you come across as if this is fact, then you get people who aren't necessarily film music fans going, yeah, these obviously got to be the 50 best of the year. And when you ignore composers like John Williams and Howard Shore and Michael Giacchino, who have written some modern day classics, I just think that there's an intentional snub there to just go for something a little bit more indie-centric and smaller, which I have no problem with. I have no problem with an article like this introducing maybe non-film score fans or even film score fans myself, because I read through this list. I'm like, you know what? Some of these I haven't even heard and I might even check out. But write an article on maybe the 50 best film scores you might not have heard before, or, you know, make recommendations to your audience of smaller scores. But to state that these are the 50 best, I just don't think is fair and good journalism.
I hear what you're saying. I think nowadays, you know, there's so many top whatever lists that it just goes hand in hand now. Obviously, whoever writes any top best of or whatever kind of list, it's their opinion. And so, you know, you just kind of factor that in. I mean, we're coming up with our own quote unquote top scores. Obviously, they're just our opinions,
sure.
And they're fueled by, informed by who we are and our who we are as people, when we're born, what we appreciate, our aesthetics, all of these things. Same for these guys. You know, it was when I went through the list, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, a bunch of these wouldn't make my top 1,000. You know. That's just how it is. And a lot of the ones we're probably going to talk about, they probably didn't even notice or even know exist. So they couldn't put it on their list because they know nothing about it. And that's fine. And my guess is the people who read the playlist, I bet that that list reflects a lot of their tastes. And I hope some of them are listening to this because I'd be interested to get their feedback on what they think about our lists and the scores we're bringing and what they knew about them or didn't know about them, or did it. Prompt them to want to listen to any of these scores or not. You know, I know our list is going to be very different than the playlist. And that's what's great. It's like, you know, if you're into the indie film, kind of these small films with these very, most of the time, much smaller scores, then there's a whole bunch of that out there for you in this century. Or if you're into more classical film scores, there's quite a lot out there for you in this 21st century. And so I think we're going to name quite a few of those. So an interesting article. It always gets people talking. I think that's probably the best thing about the infinite number of top whatever lists that are put together. It just gets people discussing. And that's usually a good thing, usually. Mm-hmm. Sometimes lines get drawn and it's just war. But yes, it's their opinion. And you know, we get to have ours, and hopefully they'll listen. Jessica Kiang and Rodrigo Perez, if you're listening, yeah, we'd love to. Maybe we'll have a showdown someday, or a hoedown, one of the two.
I want to see the hoedown.
the hoedown and showdown. Sure. Yeah. But so what you and I are going to do in these minutes that we have together, we're going to go through 10, and I'm not going to say top 10, but they kind of are, 10 of our favorite scores from the 21st century so far, at least through 2015, right? And I'm betting that there's going to be a lot of crossover between our lists. And so we're going to start off with a few of the titles that we think are going to be on each other's list. And we'll take turns listening. We'll go through five.
Okay.
And then the remaining five we'll list off. We'll talk about those. And if there's time, we'll hit our pretty extensive honorable mentions list. So let's start there. Our favorite, 10 of our favorite scores from the 21st century, we're calling 21st century 2000 to 2015, even though 2000 is in the 20th century. We're going to start in the year 2000. So it can be any score from 2000 forward through 2015. So I'll let you go first. Name your first score that you think I'm also going to have.
I think it's pretty obvious that the Lord of the Rings trilogy's on both of our lists.
No, it's not on my list.
Oh my God. I'm unreal. Kidding. I quit.
Yeah, pretty easy one. Yeah. Pretty easy one. Okay. So. That's what we've
combined all three scores. It's not like the Star Wars movies where obviously they're self-contained scores. They do continue on the story, but this is, I mean, Shore wrote these things one after another and continued the the music. So, if I had to separate it out, I probably would pick Fellowship as my favorite.
Me too. I mean, but three of our spots would have been gone just like
that's,
that.
Well, yeah, for sure.
And so it's just like we can't. I mean, it's kind of fair and it's kind of unfair, but it's definitely they would all be on my list.
Right.
So my first choice will be that I think is on your list is going to be Tron Legacy.
Tron Legacy is on my honorable mentions.
Holy moly, dude. Are you serious?
And that's on just on the outside looking
in. That's insane,
dude. It's still one of my most played film scores of all time. But to leapfrog any of these other scores, I'd have a hard time putting that in the top 10. But it's probably my number 11.
That's correct. That was literally the second score I wrote down. It's just like, boom. It didn't. It just took me long enough to write LOTR down, and I was already thinking about Tron Legacy.
If I had to think about it a little bit more, because this list is based on a 2012 list that I put together. I did a best of the new millennium program.
Right.
Sorry, my favorites of the new millennium. And now looking at the list, looking at my top 10, probably I could probably switch out Tron Legacy, but I have to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, think about it. Yeah. Maybe we'll have a mulligan at the end of the show. We can mulligan and change one. Because there's one man that I don't know. I left it, but I still wanted to change it. Okay, go with the next one.
I would say The Matrix Reloaded is on your list.
Ooh. No. That was one that was on, off, on, off, on, off. But it ended up being... not. It ended up making it to my honorable mention list.
That one for me is about neck and neck with the Lord of the Rings for me.
Ooh, wow. That is high praise.
It's in... Can we give the kind of ranking? Because I got them ranked.
I didn't rank mine, so you can rank yours. But
so
I,
it's
I,
two, three, four. It's about number five. And Lord of the Rings is number four.
Oh, gee, man, Christmas.
And they are just like, they could, I would probably, honestly, I think now I would flip them. I think I have way more appreciation for The Matrix than The Lord of the Rings.
What?
Yeah.
Dude, but again, LOTR
they're both great. The expanded releases really helped me with The Matrix where The Lord of the Rings expanded releases diminished my appreciation.
I completely do not understand how that is possible. It would, I mean, if I was ranking them, there would be no question in my mind. Lord of the Rings would be number one, and nothing would even be. I wouldn't even have to think about it. It's just like, yep, and everybody else fight for 2 through 9, essentially. Okay, all right. So I think How to Train Your Dragon is going to be on there.
Yep.
Okay,
that's my number 10.
Number 10, wow. Okay, I don't know where that would fall. It would probably, I couldn't say. That's why I didn't rank them, because I would still be trying to rank them.
I put it in 10, same thing with like Tron Legacy. Just they're just still too new. Mm-hmm. And now that's 3 years, 4 years later, I think I do have to kind of go back to this and see how they might rank now. And I have to listen to them all again, which I think would be fantastic.
Sure.
And so maybe I'll do an updated show. But Dragon right now, it's in the top 10 for sure. Its placement is, you know, it's in the 10 right now. It could probably beat some of these scores. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. All right. What's your next one?
Which one, let's see. I'm going to pick AI by John Williams.
Honorable mention.
Ah, I think I know what the one John Williams, though, that is. In your list.
I had two and I moved one. Was that the one I moved out? I think you know which one's going to. There is one on my list, but that's not it.
We'll leave. I'm pretty sure I know what it is.
So AI is on yours.
AI is 8.
Okay. 8. Yeah. Okay. All right. Great score. No argument there. But, one time I had 3 John Williams scores in my top 10. I was like, I can't. I've got to make room. Yeah. I mean, you know, whatever you like, whatever you like, you know. But I was like, I didn't feel comfortable. Okay. So AI is not on my top 10. I'm on my fourth one. Now it's getting crazy because it's getting a little bit more difficult to predict. This is probably my most controversial.
Okay.
It was on again, off again. But I'm going to say it's on yours. No, I don't think so. I changed my mind. I'm going to say this instead. I'm going to say Final Fantasy, the Spirit Within.
Yes, absolutely.
Elliot Goldenthal. Nice.
Totally.
Nice.
That
score is amazing.
That and Alien 3 are probably two of the best scores. And Michael Collins, put those three in together, the best scores he's ever done. And how can you not put one of his greatest accomplishments on a top 10 list? It's just so mind-blowing. What an incredible score that is. So that's number 6 on my list.
All right. So your last one that you think I have on mine?
Oh, wow. I don't think you have any of these. Although I might... I don't think you have my 1 and 2. My 9, probably not. I'm going to go with my 3.
Okay.
Just maybe. I'll see what you think about Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
Oh, interesting. Nope.
Nope.
Didn't make my list at all, actually.
Not even honorable mention?
Nope. Thought about it. I really enjoyed that score, but I mean, I could see it working its way onto my honorable mention, but I didn't put it there. That's Edward Schirmer, right?
Yeah, and that was my favorite of, what year was that? 04 or 06?
Ooh, I don't remember.
Okay.
Somewhere in there, middle of the decade.
Yeah, 04.
04.
Which would just be
great score.
Yeah, and what a year.
Great film.
Was. Yeah.
Great film.
Totally, totally great film. Underappreciated. I wish there was a sequel.
Yeah.
It would have been so much fun. So yeah, that's my number totally 3. Agree.
Okay. So that's your 5.
Yep.
Let's see, I got one more to pick. I'm going to say, I don't think you have any of these other ones on yours, to be honest. But I'm going to try it. Memoirs of a Geisha, John Williams, 2005.
Yeah, you know, that's the one it's an honorable mention of mine, and I do love it. And I think in 2005, I even at that point said it was probably one of his top 10 scores of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reevaluating it later on, it's like, wow, no, it's not his top 10. It's still amazing. And
you don't think it's a top 10 now? Yeah, that's hard.
Like top 10 of all time? No.
Yeah, that's tough. I'd have to sit down.
But it is so good. It got robbed of the Oscar.
Oh, no doubt.
Have you heard the John Williams and Yo-Yo Ma recording session? The 3-track EP, which was just so beautiful, and I'm playing that on my show this week. It's just
nice, it's
you can just tell Williams was in love with this score. That everything, all the 4 scores that he wrote in 2005, this is the one I think he really, really wanted to have.
This is the one he said is the only film he ever asked to score.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true. Yeah. Well, especially that says a lot. Spielberg was associated with it and was supposed to
originally,
And then when Spielberg left, he's like, oh, I've got to stay on this project. So,
yeah.
And just so much feeling in this one.
It's beautiful.
Such a beautiful score. So, yeah, I'll have that on my honorable mention for sure.
Okay.
Beautiful.
All right. So I think we at least have, we have 5 left each. Yep. Why don't you name one of your next ones?
Okay. So in at number 9 would be Alan Silvestri's The Mummy Returns.
Oh, wow. Did not see that coming.
I can remember hearing it for the first time on a train ride from Toronto to Hamilton a day after work. And I picked it up at either Tower Records or HMV. And I put it on, and it was something I didn't expect. I didn't expect it to sound like that, like a classic adventure score, big and thematic with that. I didn't think he had that hero theme in him. I'm not sure why, but I thought that maybe he was already dried up. And then this was it just seemed fresh. And like Williams with Memoirs of a Geisha, I think Silvestri just like poured his heart into this one. And it was just so massive, and the double decker chase was just so masterfully scored, and then seeing the film and hearing the end credit cue, and I'm like, all right, great, let's listen to that on the album, and it's not there.
Oh,
and that right now is probably my all time most played track in my entire collection.
That's amazing.
It is. I mean, for all the scores that I enjoy, that little 2-minute piece is one of my all-time favorite pieces of music.
And another reason it's amazing, at least from my standpoint, is I don't know anything about that score.
Oh, really?
Like, I haven't listened to it since it came out. Oh. And none of the Mummy scores did much for me. I don't know why. Maybe because I didn't like the movie so much that I was just like, whatever. And
I hated the sequel for sure. I really enjoyed the first one. I really enjoyed it. But I guess it was just like I needed that Indiana Jones kick, and that sort of gave it to me.
Yeah.
So, and Goldsmith did a great job on his score as well. This one just felt more Williams-esque. It's just a little bit more colorful. And you have that kind of, it's almost like an Indiana Jones main theme for O'Connell. And there's just such a great love theme. Like I said, the Sandcastles cue, which makes up the end credit cue, is incredible. I really hope there's an expanded release of it one of these days, because none of the LA sessions that took place after they came back from London made it onto the original soundtrack recording.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of cool stuff, like the Scorpion King fight at the end, a lot of really, really good stuff that still hasn't been made available. But it's just a,
I'm sure
it if will. You really like those big, meaty, beefy action scores, it's one for you.
I think I need to revisit and give it, you know, that's, I've gone back and been able to appreciate a lot of scores that I rejected originally. So I look forward to that. I'll go back and revisit The Mummy. But it was, it was nowhere to be seen on my list at all. So I'll name my next one, Atonement, Dario Marinelli from 2007. I love that score. One of the most original things I've heard done in a score in a while, as he integrated typewriter into the score itself, that I will never forget. Just the first time I saw the film, and I was like, "Oh wait, this is whoa!" You know, just to see how he did that was just so inventive and fresh, and it stayed with me for sure. And then the piece, the whole Dunkirk scene, and that whole the music there, and working. Tying the choir, the choral men's chorus that were singing there into the score. It was just phenomenal. And that's remained a highlight score from this century. I love that movie. I love that score. I think it's one of Dario Marinelli's best. What do you have next?
Or
what do you think about that score?
I love it. It deserved the Academy Award. It was my third favorite score that year. And one of my... we actually talked about one of these scores a couple of weeks ago. Island of Lost Souls was number two that year for me. And then one of my honorable mentions was the top score for me that year. So we'll get to that a little bit later.
Okay.
But yeah, Atonement, fantastic. I got no beef with that one at all.
Okay. Okay.
So we skip over on my list 8, which was AI. So then in at number 7 for me was Marco Beltrami's best score, Hellboy.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Nowhere to be found.
I've read some reviews that Marco Beltrami can't write themes. He's not a very good, thematic composer. And all I have to do is just throw Hellboy at them and they'll shut up. It's just so rich in melody. Really some bizarre orchestrations. I'm pretty sure the main theme, I think, is either performed backwards or recorded and then played in reverse, or one of the instruments is. It's really strange. But there's so much great music that is missing, including the wicked end credit suite, which just brings all of those wonderful themes together in just this rousing 7.5 minute piece of music that I cannot believe was left off of Rez's disc. So, but when it comes down to comic book film scores, I think this is one of the best. It's Marco Beltrami at his best, and it's so full of heart, emotion, excitement, just a lot of fun. And I'm shocked that he wasn't brought on for the second film.
Didn't Elfman do the second one?
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense.
I think I like the second one. I like the second movie more, for sure.
I don't remember much of the second one.
That was the Golden Army one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're both fun films, for sure.
Yeah.
But as score-wise, I think Beltrami was at the peak.
It's only been in recent years that I've been able to, that I've come to appreciate Marco Beltrami. That back that far, what was that? What year was that?
Hellboy was 2004.
Early 2000s, right?
Yeah, 2004.
Oh, that late. Okay. Yeah, I was not on the Beltrami train yet. So that's something else. I'm certainly open to going back and giving it a test and see how much I enjoy it. I haven't seen that film in a long, long time. So nothing comes to my mind at all.
Okay.
When you say it. So interesting. Marco Beltrami, Hellboy. Okay, so I've got one here that I don't know if you know it, but Tales of Earthsea by Tamiya Terashima. It was a Studio Ghibli release, but not Hayao Miyazaki, his son, Goro Miyazaki, directed this. I think it was his first that he directed. And it was pretty much critically panned. It's actually an adaptation of the famous series, Tales of Earthsea. But it's a Ghibli film, like I said, 2006. But the score is insanely good. I mean, it's got some... If I'm ranking all of the Studio Ghibli film scores, this one's pretty high, and it's not Joe Hisaishi, which, you know, obviously he's the master of Ghibli scores. This ranks right up there and above a number of them in my book. Just super strong thematic material all throughout. It's got a couple of themes that are just forever embedded in my head. Just long, languishing, beautiful themes that you would hear associated with a lot of Western scores, fantasy scores. But very romantic, very lush. His instrumentation is very interesting. He pulled in a lot of very obtuse kind of instruments to play some of these parts that, you know, kind of sounds like a hurdy-gurdy, or it kind of sounds like a duduk. I think he did use a duduk or some variant of a duduk. So a lot of instruments you wouldn't expect in a quote-unquote Japanese movie, even though Tales of Earthsea is kind of more European in how it looks. So great, great score. Have you heard that score before?
No, I'm writing notes. I'm totally interested. Absolutely.
It is fantastic. The film itself, I don't think it's as bad as people. It's got a lot of Miyazaki beats in it. I mean, there's a lot of parallels to whether you want to look at Princess Mononoke or some of the other famous Ghibli films. He clearly did a lot of modeling after what his father did. So I enjoy it. It's not for, I mean, it's pretty scary at the end, as Miyazaki can be himself. You know, the villains can get pretty scary by the end of the movie. And this villain does. It's like, holy moly. When I first saw it in 2006, I was like, man, this is not for, it's not bloody. It's horrifying what happened. So anyway, that's Tales of Earthsea, Tamiya Terashima. If you can find it, I highly, highly recommend listening to it. Okay, what do you got next?
We mentioned Final Fantasy. We mentioned Matrix. We mentioned Lord of the Rings. We mentioned Sky Captain. So, my second favorite of the entire new millennium is a film that nobody liked, nobody saw, and was, I mean, just panned by critics. It's called Pavilion of Women.
Oh, yeah, I didn't
Conrad
see it.
Conrad Pope.
But I did listen to it.
The trailer looks okay, but then it got 6% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ouch.
Oh. Willem Dafoe's in it.
Yeah.
But it came out in May of 2001. And when I heard this score, I knew I was hearing something special from John Williams' orchestrator. And I'm not sure how much Williams' influence there is in this score, but it could be the Memoirs of a Geisha's cousin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's just so much diversity in the score. You get some cues that are completely ethnic in orchestration. Then you get just more traditional Western scoring, huge chorus. There's giant percussion, everything from uplifting cues to tragic cues, lots of cool themes. The Erhu, what an
Erhu's
instrument.
Beautiful.
Oh,
in that.
My goodness. What a
it's fantastic.
Beautiful. And I just like the way that it sounds happy and sad at the same time. Such a tragic but almost uplifting instrument. It's
very vocal.
Very much so.
It feels very vocal.
So I really love the mixture of the Eastern and Western musical sensibilities, and I think Conrad Pope just knocked it out of the park with this one. Apparently got a dog of a picture to write to, but he found inspiration like all good composers should, no matter what they are scoring, and he just went above and beyond, and it's his masterpiece. And I would love to hear more from him now. And I think anything that he's writing these days, whether it's that Marilyn Monroe picture that he did or Tim's Vermeer, he's just so fascinating. And so he's just an extraordinary composer. And so if you haven't heard Pavilion of Women, check it out. Just one of the best, I would say, just large scale epic scores that you are going to you're going to hear just really traditional film scoring and just some of the most beautiful themes I think you're going to hear. Great score.
Heartily agree. It's not on my list or even my honorable mentions, but should be. But it isn't. I just blew that one. But that's a great call. That is because that is a great score. My next one is, I'll stay in that same vein, kind of. I slid in there once we adjusted our date range to include the 2000s. I put Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon on there by Tan Doon. If you'd asked me maybe 6-7 years ago, this probably would not be in my top 10. And again, I'm not going in any order. It probably wouldn't make my top 10. But now, having this much time with it, it really is just an amazing score. For many of the same reasons as you were describing Pavilion of Women, the Erhu, fantastic. The yearning for the sword, I think that's the name of the track, is just, it's just so poignant. There's so much emotion in it. And I think, you know, if I look at the scores that we're listing, you know, most of the scores are pretty emotional or have a very emotional element to it. It may not run the length of the score, but there is some emotional, there's just a lot of emotion in it. And I think Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I think at the time, I think I was upset that that Hans Zimmer didn't win that year for Gladiator, because I loved that and still do love that score so much. But now looking back, there's just something sublime about that score. It did win best score, didn't it? I'm almost certain it did.
I think it did.
Because Gladiator did not, and I was rooting for it too. Yeah, it did win. There's just something sublime about that score, and something so, I don't know, vulnerable in it. It echoes the themes of the film, which I still love that film. You know, Ang Lee directing a film, a martial arts, quote unquote, martial arts film, a wire fu film. You know, when I first heard about it, I was like, really? But when I watch that now and I compare it to the martial arts movies that are made now, it's so much more sophisticated. Even the fight scenes, most of the fight scenes in today's kung fu movies are just, they're edited to hell. Shaky cam. I mean, you can't appreciate anything, but this is just an elegant, the movie is very elegant and the score is very elegant. And once we opened it up to 2000, I had to find a way to get it onto my list. So there you go.
It's a very influential score as well.
And I'll, the percussive parts particular.
Totally. John Williams, I don't think you would have heard the Tychos in Attack of the Clones if it wasn't for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Right.
And a little bit of information that you might not know, but when I attended the Mercenary scoring sessions for Michael Giacchino and Chris Tilden, I would always ask for the demo of the main theme, because that's what I would be filming for. I'd be creating the main theme videos for them. So he sent me the demo. And he just said, you know, I just want to let you know that this is the demo and the drums necessarily aren't going to sound like this because they have been ripped off from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Wow.
Now, the demo sounds much different, especially percussion wise, than it does now in the original recording. But in order for him to get that sound, he was very much influenced by Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So it's amazing how influential that score is. And nobody really talks about that. It's the Tycho drums, really, that became quite prominent in film music after that point.
Yeah, I remember watching Attack of the Clones, and I'm like, I guess that is the chase scene in Coruscant, right?
That's right.
And the Zam Wessel scene. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just saw this, but it was a fight scene.
It's amazing to see how, you know, a score, like, to influence John Williams, that's something special.
Yeah. Or influence George Lucas, and he's like, I want this.
Right. Yeah.
That's probably what happened. I'm sure John Williams did something completely different.
Oh, it'd be interesting to hear if he did.
Yeah, it would be. All right, what's your next one?
So the last one that I have, and my number one of all time, the one I can't stop talking about is Signs by James Newton Howard.
Mm.
And wow, I could gush about this for hours. What I'll say is that, folks, if you want to hear what I have to say and think about this score, just go to my favorites of the new millennium program at cinematicsound.net and have a listen. I do about a 10-minute essay on I enjoyed this. For me, it's really hard to kind of sum up in a couple of words. Just brilliant monothematic scoring, that three-note motif, and what James Newton Howard does with it is so spectacular. Brilliant tension building. The album itself is just so coherent from start to finish. It starts with that big bang and then just kind of goes on this slow build until you hit that 10-minute finale cue, which is just out of this world. I compare this score to the great John Williams Jaws score because the way the three-note motif works, it signals the danger, the aliens. You don't necessarily see them in the movie, but then if you hear that three-note motif, that's what tells you that they're either around or that we're thinking about them. And I'm just floored by the orchestration. I'm floored by how it works in the movie. We talked about, again, a couple of weeks ago about what perfect scores we would pick. And this, I think, is a flawless, flawless film score. And it leaves me speechless, but I could talk about it forever. I'm just dumbfounded by it. I watch it and I'm like, wow, I can't believe James Newton Howard wrote this score and how he wrote it and how it works so perfectly in the movie. There's just so much going on. And then when you get to the Hand of Fate part one and two, again, just 10 straight minutes of just emotions all over the place. But it's so coherent. It just seems so organic. It seems so natural. It's just
what year was that released?
Brilliant. It is 2001.
2001. Okay. 2000. Another good one. 2001.
Two. Yes.
Yeah. 2002. Okay.
So I'm in love with it. Just in love with it.
I'm ashamed to say it's not on my honorable mention. Although it probably should be. Somehow I didn't put it. I don't think I have any James Newton Howard anywhere, which is weird. Because I think it's an amazing score. But somehow it didn't come to my mind as I was putting this together, which is weird. And I need to think that through a little bit more.
I think it's understandable. I think that it's the slow burn in the middle, like after you get that huge main title. If you're more kind of action centric and you aren't willing to kind of invest your time into something a little bit more suspenseful, and
I don't think I am,
and a little bit more. I mean, I'm not saying this to you. I'm just from what I've read. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can. Yeah, in general, I think that that's what most people are turned off by the score is that it is small. It's a small score.
Yeah,
but. The way it builds to certain climaxes. There are a couple of them in there. There's even an over the top jump scare.
Yeah.
But without it, that scene doesn't work.
Sure.
And even the asthma attack scene is just it's
fantastic.
It's so good.
And he's the master at that.
He is.
I mean, what's the other one? Lady in the Water.
Oh,
he does that.
Yeah.
And he builds to a magnificent conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he's fantastic.
So good. But Signs for me, when I remember seeing that movie and I'm like, this is something special.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking earlier about a score that had kind of jumped into my top 10 of all time. I put Signs in at number 10 now. Which dropped down my Lord of the Rings into my
20 to 11.
So Science, just the more I listen to it, the more I see the movie, the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, it just keeps getting better and better and better for me.
Now, you must have one more because I have one, two, three. three that I haven't mentioned. Wait, let me count these again. One, two, three, four.
I think there's
five,
some
six,
that maybe
seven,
you guessed
eight,
and
nine,
got
ten.
Right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because I think we skipped. Yeah, I think there was one. Matrix Reloaded was one that I haven't really talked about.
Oops, I got 11. Okay, so I have to make a decision. Okay. So I have two. I have two that I haven't talked about.
All right.
And there's one more. So I'm only going to do 10. So I've got to bump. Okay, I know what I'm going to bump. Okay. All right. So then the next one, and again, these are in no order at all. The next one I'm going to bring up is 2002, Philip Glass, The Hours.
Wow. I
love that score. I remember seeing, when I went to see the movie, I was just entranced by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize it was the score that was doing that. I was just fully enraptured by the movie. And afterwards, I don't think I bought the score immediately. I can't remember. But I remember I was listening to the score and I was like, oh, that's what completely mystified me and hypnotized me in that film. You know how Philip Glass's music is.
Yes.
It's very typical Philip Glass. But it's just so... I'm sure it's the movie itself, which helps add so much poignancy to the listen. But I think it's fantastic. It's my favorite film score of his.
Yes, and, Mike, me too.
I mean, it's not like there's a huge amount of diversity in his scores. There's a lot of similarity. But in this particular case, there's just something very difficult to describe about this score and why it stands out from his other ones for me, but definitely does. Whenever I start listening to it, I can't stop listening to it. You know, I can't just like listen to one track.
Right.
I've got to listen to basically the whole thing. And I think it was, I don't know, did it get nominated? I don't even remember if it got nominated.
Yeah, it did get nominated.
Okay.
For an Oscar.
Okay, good for it. It certainly deserved it. And I think that was what made me a Philip Glass fan. I wasn't a huge fan before that particular score. And since then, I've paid close attention to his work. So, yeah, The Hours. Did that make anywhere on your...
This score, I think, might be his most accessible film score. It's much more melodic than anything else that Glass has done. I think there's a wonderful flow to the score, even though he's still using his minimalism. That just never varies. But I think that this one is just a little bit more warmer. It's not as cold. It's really, really emotional. It fits the film like a glove.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. After I heard this score, I then kind of looked through and to see what else I might like. So I tried his Kotze trilogy of scores, which are sensational.
Yeah,
absolutely
they are.
Sensational.
I did the same thing.
So I think that if anybody is interested in Philip Glass, I think The Hours might be your kind of way in to his music.
Yeah, it's your entry. It's
very
your
much
entry
so.
Score.
I just, yeah. I, what I,
it was mine.
It's tough to find anything better than that. So you might be a little disappointed, or if minimalism is not your type of music, which is not mine at all. I really don't like it, but I think that he makes it accessible in this score. And if it's the only Philip Glass score you own, then it's just deeply rewarding. It's like you said, it's such an emotive piece of music. And again, see the film. I think that really, really helps the appreciation of the music as well.
Yeah, it's a super emotional film.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just like, it's very heavy. It's a very heavy film.
But you can feel that also in his music. Like where sometimes you don't get, his music isn't all that dynamic. But you can just tell that there are crescendos, and things build to a satisfying conclusion. And I don't know enough Glass music to say whether he does that, or he doesn't do that in his film music or in his classical music. But some of the stuff I've heard, I just don't get that sense from his music and from minimalism as a whole. So I think it's quite dynamic. It's quite a dynamic score. It's I don't think it's anything like what Glass has ever done before, in my opinion.
I think there's some very base things that are common in a lot of his music that you find as kind of the spine of this. So when I went to listen to his other music, I was like, okay, that's Philip Glass's thing. I mean, the whole minimalism thing, the ostinatos, all of that, just kind of, it always courses through his music. But what he layers on top of it for The Hours, I think is a little more
sensational.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little more apprehendable, emotional, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So that would be the one. And I have one other one, and then I'll tell you which one I just demoted. and so my last one would be from 2003. Does not get nearly as much love as I think it should. It's from one Mr. Hans Zimmer, and that is The Last Samurai.
Yeah, that's a good score.
I think it's way up there on my, you know, top Zimmer score list. I think that movie and that score suffered greatly because of Return of the King coming out that year. I think had Return of the King not been out that year, or any Lord of the Rings film, that film would have gotten a lot more attention, and that score would have gotten a lot more attention. I think it's phenomenal. I think it has some of his best thematic work. Whenever I see that film, I can't divorce it from the music. The music makes that film in a lot of ways, especially in the concluding. Any of the more reflective scenes. It's just, of course, you know, its connection to Japan gives me an affinity for it. But you know, he's done a lot of Asian scores, and none of them really sound like The Last Samurai. I mean, you've got The Waters of Irrawaddy, you've got Beyond Rangoon, but there's some commonalities, but there's something really special about The Last Samurai. And, you know, the way he ties in the vocals, which were Native American vocals, but over, you know, this very Japanese, it's Western, but over Japanese instrumentation, over the huge taiko drums and all of that. I just thought, it felt like there was much more thought and detail in this score than in an emotional way, as opposed to a technological way of, I've just got 18,000 brass players to play, or, you know, 30 drummers, you know, not that kind of technical detail, but narrative detail in terms of, the Native Americans that tied into story-wise, that tied into the story, the Native Americans. Because when I first heard, I was like, "That are those Japanese vocalists?" Or I didn't understand what it didn't make sense. But later, as I rewatched the film, I was like, okay, it's representing the Native Americans that got killed, blah, blah, blah. It makes sense. So I just think there's more narrative detail in this score than a lot of his other ones. And it just felt like he was being very... it felt like he was emotionally involved with this score. And I think that comes through. And so it's easily one of my favorite Zimmer scores from this century, and it makes my top 10 list. So what I booted out was Inception,
oh, okay.
2010,
okay.
Which I did that hesitantly because if I had to pick between Last Samurai and Inception, I have to go with Last Samurai. But in terms of impact, Inception has had a huge impact in this century. And for that, I mean, I think it's a good score. I really enjoy that score. It's gotten played out because of everyone mimicking it,
right,
and him mimicking it himself. But in and of itself, when that first came out, it was fantastic and was unlike, you know, really anything. And, you know, there was story, there was narrative in that as well, which I like. And it tied into the story so closely, which I thought was something that you didn't hear or find a lot with scores being that tied to the actual story itself. And so I very hesitantly moved that out because of its impact, really. But if we're talking about just about the music, I've got to go with The Last Samurai over Inception.
Yeah, I haven't played Last Samurai in a really long time. I haven't even seen... I saw the movie once, and I remember liking it. And you're talking about the film's popularity, and I'm just wondering, was that at the time when Tom Cruise was going crazy?
And did that 2003?
I'm not
maybe.
Sure.
I'm not. I think it was before.
Okay.
I think it was before he had his little PR nightmare. I think I could be wrong.
So I'm not
but
sure whether
I think
that hurt the film or not, but it's a really, really well made movie, and that's Edward Zwick too, right?
Yes, Ed Zwick and John Toll.
I'm just
doing.
I'm curious as to what happened between Zwick and James Horner to end that collaboration because he didn't do The Siege, and I'm like, why isn't James Horner on The Siege?
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering what happened, because they, you know, James Horner wrote some incredible music. I mean, you think Legends of the Fall.
Oh, for sure. And it's like, absolutely.
Wow, so what happened? So
in this case, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure Horner would have knocked it out of the park too, but yeah, so you're right. Like, you know, you can tell when Zimmer's really involved emotionally in his scores. And even though I haven't heard it for a while, I can still kind of hum that theme. Mm-hmm. Especially that last cue is phenomenal in my head. I know what it sounds like, and he pretty much nailed it and probably was the perfect composer.
All right. Well, there are our top 10 of our favorite. How about that? 10 of our favorite scores from the 21st century through 2015. We named off quite a few. I wonder how many unique ones we named. Probably about, I don't know, 25 or so. Well, I guess that's not possible to do 25. Maybe 15 or no, more than that. 10 each could be 20, 15, 16, something like that. We're probably giving you 16 or 17 unique scores combining our list together. What I think we'll do is in our show notes, we can put our honorable mentions list in there. So you can read that and see all the scores that almost made our favorites list. We'd love to know what you think. What are some scores that we might have missed that you think should definitely be a favorite of the 21st century? You can let us know that. Or if you just completely disagree with some of the ones we've put on there, we'd like to know. Or if we've turned you on to something that you just missed completely, whether it be Hellboy or Tales of Earthsea, there's a lot of interesting choices we put on this list, so we'd love for you to check them out and let us know what you think when you do listen to them. So if you're going to do that, I'll tell you what you can do. You can send us an email at soundcaster@tracksounds.com. Leave us a voicemail and let us know with your voice what titles we've missed or what titles should not have been on our list in your opinion. We don't mind. Go ahead and share. It's just our own pick. You don't have to agree or disagree. No right or wrong. We'd love to know what you think, though. Of course, you can hit us up at Track Sounds on Twitter and on Facebook as well. If you want to follow me, you can do so at C. Coleman as well on Twitter. And Eric, how can people let you know what they think?
I'm on Twitter at Sin Sound Radio, Facebook at Cinematic Sound. CinematicSound at yahoo.com is my email address, and you can check out Cinematic Sound Radio at cinematicsound.net.
So that is going to do it for episode 10 of Soundcast Stereo. Thank you so much for listening, and until our next episode, we want to tell you to keep it balanced.